Hey folks, want to talk a little bit about our sponsor for the coaching staff. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. Had to bring my car in just last week, and Juan Carlos and everybody there took great care of me. They've got some great deals for you folks here, and you're going to want to listen carefully to this. If you're in the Omaha area and you need an oil change, you need to go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha. If you go there on Wednesday, it's only $15 for the labor on your oil change. You need to mention a pen and a napkin, but it's only $15 on Wednesdays for the labor for your oil changes. If you need a new set of tires, go to Ruiz Auto, and it is, if you get a set of four tires, they'll take $75 off if you mention a pen and a napkin. And finally, all American used cars and trucks, 144th and I-80 there. If you say a pen and a napkin 2025, if you mention a pen and a napkin 2025, it is $300 off of any used car or truck out at all American used cars and trucks. So if you are in the need of an oil change, if you are in need of a new set of tires, if you are in the need of a nice new to you automobile, you need to go check out Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. Again, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha, or All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80 here in Omaha. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 130. And we're going to zig instead of zagging this week. But before we get to our zigging and zagging, first of all, my co-host, Mr. Tony Devis, how are you doing, my friend? And most importantly, happy Mother's Day to your wonderful wife, Rita.
Yeah, pass that along to Carla as well. I'm doing well. It's allergies are a little bit hectic right now, but the weather is absolutely beautiful. It's going to be 80s this week in eastern Iowa. So, I don't know. Can't be doing a whole lot better. How about you?
We're good. This has been the week and a half of movement, moving kids back from school. We had a college graduate come through, and so
big deal.
That is a big deal. Really proud of Carter Plum, and you know, we've got all five kids back in the city of Omaha for the time being, for the next close to 3 months till Genevieve goes back to Northwest. We've got that. Michael started a new job last week, so we've got. Transition and changes galore all over the place here, buddy. So
celebrations.
Yes, it is. Yes, very much so. It's a blessing to have these responsibilities. So episode 130 here, we are going to talk about finding joy without coaching. And what we mean by that is, you know, a lot of coaches that are listening here, your head coaches, your assistant coaches, but I know that there's coaches that listen that you're not coaching anymore. And for some of you, that's by your choice. For others of you, that may not be by your choice. But there is still joy to be found, and there are still lessons to be learned about coaching, even when you're not coaching. And that's what Tony and I are going to talk about here this week. But before we get to that, we've gone full circle. We've gone all the way around. We went through 100 uniform numbers. Look at that, Tony. 100. Who knew we could count to 100? That's first and foremost. That's the most.
Not amazing. My elementary teachers.
No. You thought second grade was something that needed to be done three times. But anyway.
Yeah.
We had done the uniform number thing for obviously 100 episodes. And then I kind of been like, okay, what are we going to do? I came up with something here, Tony. We're going to go, and I'm a history teacher by trade, social studies teacher by trade, as are you. Let's talk a little history. Tony, we're going to start back. Each week, we are going to talk about, very briefly, the champions at the end of the season, and we are going to commence in 1946, the 46-47 season. That was the first official year of the National Basketball Association. And so, Tony, would you like to know who the 1946-47 NBA champions were?
Who would?
The Philadelphia Warriors defeated the Chicago Stags 4-1 in the NBA Finals that year.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
The Philadelphia Warriors and the Chicago Stags.
Yes, yes. And Mike Bixler was an assistant on that Philadelphia Warriors team.
Oh, the Bix. I miss him.
Bix. Shout out, Bix. Sorry about putting that toilet paper on your truck. But anyway, old war stories. Only you and I and maybe Chad Angel, who's listening, really understands that story. But anyway, 1947 NCAA champion, men's basketball champion. Tony, would you care to guess who it was?
Who? Let's go with...
I'll give you a hint. They're in New England. The school is in New England.
Harvard.
It starts with an H.
Who?
Very famous player on the team. Legendary player on the team. He's still alive.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
I am sunk on this one.
Yeah. The Holy Cross Crusaders, led by Bob Cousy.
Bob Cousy, yes.
Yes.
The magician.
Yes. They defeated Oklahoma 58-47 in the NCAA final in 1947. So there you have it. So
this is interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. What do you think, Tony? You like it?
I like this segment.
Yeah. So we're just going to keep doing this here. And when I suppose when we get into the 70s and the 80s and the stuff that that Tony and I are more familiar with, history that we have lived, I'm sure we'll go into more depth with some of these conversations. But I thought that would be a good gimmick, Tony. So
that is a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good bit. We can make this work.
All right. Awesome. Finding joy without coaching. Like I said, in my little intro there, Tony, it's a tough adjustment at times, not coaching. For some people, it's something that they've chosen, like I did. For others, they're told, your services are no longer needed. And that's a really, really bitter pill to swallow. Most of the time in those situations, for some folks, it's, you know, let's say it's retirement, whatever it may be. But, you know, I think that there is a process that you go through when you are not coaching and you kind of got to figure things out.
Yeah, most definitely. And the thing that's always kind of interesting too is that whether or not you're coaching, and if you're not, you still are very valuable and have something to give back to the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hope those coaches that, you know, it wasn't their choice don't feel less than. Because Marty, as we all know, I mean, you get in the right situation, you coach for a long time, you know, you get in a certain situation, I don't know if John Wooden could win, and you might be miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is in so many ways, especially at the high school level, it's about being at the right place in the right time. And we've all heard the horror stories. You know, my friend Babe Kwasniak from Ohio, his team made it to the state championship game, and they were led by his son, who's a Division I player. Leading scorer, all-time leading scorer in Ohio high school history. And a couple of weeks after the state championship game, they let him go. And, you know, and if you want to go check out Coach Kwasniak's stuff, it's on X, it's on Facebook, if you're friends with him there. And he's very open. They you know, and then they said he wasn't Christian enough. It's a Christian school. It's a private Christian school. You know, and it's just, you just never know, Tony. You just never know. And so I think one of the first things, whether it is by your choice or whether you know that it's like it's time to walk away, and Tony and I, you and I have both been there in situations where, you know, we were just fried and within a couple of weeks of each other without the other one knowing about it, we both, you know, it was just time. I'm sure you did the same thing. One thing I figured out, there is life without coaching. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to, because this is a coaching podcast, I don't want to say that, you know, that in a negative way or a overly positive way, but I think, so many times, what I mean by that is so many times, and I know I went through this as well, your identity is linked to your coaching profile. And if you're not coaching, you feel like you are an incomplete person. Well, there's a lot more people that don't coach that have fulfilling lives than coaches, period. You know? So I think that's something that sometimes when coaches start to feel that burnout, that pressure, whatever their circumstances may be, they believe that, well, I have to do this because this is all I know. And I think the first thing that I would say to people is, actually, there's a lot going on in the world that doesn't revolve around a bouncing ball.
Yeah. And Marty, you hit on some really good things there. The fact that there is more to life than athletics or basketball specifically. And the other thing too, is that coaching is what we chose to do, but it's not who we are. And that was a really, really hard one for me to realize when I stopped being a head coach and then, you know, switched gears and became an assistant coach, but still had head coach responsibilities. I, you know, the head sophomore boys coach at Kennedy, I've done that for the last 6 years, but it kind of rejuvenated me, as far as things went. But I can tell you, I can see the finish line again. And I think this will be the finish line. It won't be, hey, I'm going to transition to another role. Yeah. No, this is it. Because I think like my mind is still sharp. And, you know, when I'm there, I'm all in. But I've begun to discover that there is more to life than just coaching. And the other, you know, the pull of grandkids and different things like that. It's like, it's getting close. Mm. And, you know, I look forward to that side of things. I've watched a lot of other people's kids play, and I don't want to miss out on watching my grandkids play. And so, you know, it might not be basketball. It might be a different sport. It might be band. It might be, something with drama or acting or whatever the case may be.
Wherever their passion is.
Yes, whatever their passion is. That's just my thing. I just want you to pick something you like, something that you're passionate about, and I want to sit back and watch you do it.
Mm-hmm. I think that one thing that we go through, that coaches go through, especially when they are not coaching and it's not by their choice. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, Tony, as you well know. Sometimes it's administrative, sometimes it's parents, sometimes it's, you know, whatever. So maybe sometimes it's a personal issue or that type of thing. But let's go down the road of kind of those first two. I really think, in my opinion, it's okay to be unhappy. I think it's okay to be unhappy. I think it's okay to be upset and angry. You've got to go through, it's not death. Don't get me wrong. This is not life or death or anything like that. But I think there is a certain miniature version of the five stages of grief that you can and should go through to process everything that has happened, because more than likely if things have ended in an acrimonious type of circumstance, it's been building for a while. It usually just doesn't blow up in your face and all of a sudden, you know, and obviously there's incidents, there's things that happen, there's singular, but those are kind of fewer, those are far between. I'm not saying that they don't happen, they do happen, but I think it's okay to be unhappy. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to it's a natural human instinct. It's a natural human reaction. What do you think about that, Tony?
I agree. It can be traumatic. It's going to be something that you may have to, I don't know if grieve is the right word I'm looking for here, but it might be something you need to grieve for a while. But the one thing that can't happen is you can't stay there and wallow in it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I can't sit here and tell you what's going to take you approximately 6 weeks, or it's going to take you 12 weeks or whatever. I don't know. It's different for each person, but you can't sit there and wallow. You've got to kind of get back up and dust yourself off, so to speak, and get going again and find a way to be productive. There's so many different things out there. One of the neat things I got to do this last year, even though I was still coaching, is I had a guy, Kurt Claussen, who reached out to me and asked if I would be willing to mentor a young girls basketball coach in Eldridge, Iowa. And I was like, yeah. And I had a great time doing that. And it's one of those things, like doing this with you, as far as like this podcast to help coaches, at least I hope that's you know, what we're doing here is helping coaches. But there are so many other ways out there to make yourself useful. And yes, you know, just get back up. I can't tell you how long it's going to take, and it's okay to grieve it. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to kind of process it and go through that cycle, if you will, but don't sit there and wallow in it. Eventually get up and get going again.
Mm-hmm. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. What's at the top of your list, Tony? I've kind of, you know, dominated the first couple of bullet points here. What do you got up here that you think it's important to think about?
I think it's important to kind of go back and you know, take a look at the good things that were there. I think that's where I would probably start, to be honest with you, because I think coaching is a calling, just like education, teaching, whatever. I think it's a calling. And when it ends badly, you know, whether that's your resignation, whether that's being forced out, whatever it may be, I think you want to go back and rehash those good things. Like, why did I get into this? And then think about some of the successes that you've had, some of the lives that you've impacted. And I think that's a way to kind of get the wind beneath your wings, so to speak, kind of breaking out the Bette Midler there. But anyway, kind of get going again and get yourself up. But to go back and take a look at those good things too, because a lot of times we have that recency effect, like, hey, this is the last thing that happened. It was bad. And we just kind of keep associating bad with it. But go back and take a look at the good things that have happened with it as well. I think that's one of the early things I would do.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think just to overall, when you are ready, you know, I don't think it's something you should do 2 days afterward or anything like that, you know, but
24 hours.
Yeah, let me figure this out right now. I think that you do take some time and you just take a look at the whole thing. I think once you can honestly, and again, like you said, Tony, I love what you said there. It's different for everybody. But once you can honestly take kind of that 30,000 foot view, take a look at everything from the start to the finish. What did you do well? And it, Tony, I think you would agree with me. The vast majority of the things that we do it well. We do, mm-hmm. you know, take a look at the few things that maybe you didn't do so well and then learn from it. And once you're able to take that emotion out of it, you're able to look at yourself in the mirror and go, okay, you know what? I didn't realize it at the time, but I really did this all really, really well. But you know what? I probably made a mistake when I did this and this and this. And this is maybe the reason why things didn't go in the direction that we wanted it to or whatever it may be. But I think that self-evaluation is good. Once you can take the I think the key part of it, Tony, is taking the emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm. Emotions. I was talking about this with my tennis guys the other day. I mean, I kind of equated it to like, when you can keep calm and have poise and composure, that's when you're, you know, the water is just like still. Mm-hmm. And then when those emotions get stirred up and the waves, that's like when it's really, really wavy, and bad things can happen to that ship that gets bounced around by those waves. And you said it's easier said than done, but we can learn to control those emotions. And I think that's what you're talking about there, Marty, is go back and get an objective view, not subjective, but get an objective view of what happened.
Yeah. Speaking of the emotions, kind of the next thing I wanted to talk about, Tony, like we had said, it's okay to be emotional. It's okay to be angry. But you have to, especially if you have aspirations for doing this job again, you have to keep that emotion to yourself. Now you can go, I can call up Tony and say blank and blank and blank and blank, blankety blank, blank, blank. But that's between me and Tony, because I trust Tony, you know, but I'm not going to put all those blanks on a Facebook post or a Twitter post or anything of those ilks, because that does nothing good at all. In fact, you're taking a bad situation and you're making it worse, without a doubt. So I think the next piece of advice is, or my next bullet point is, keep it in-house, keep your emotions in check. Keep your circle very, very tight, and, you know, don't have your Festivus airing of grievances over your Instagram account or anything like that. If you've got some things that you just need to vent about or you're frustrated with, rely on the people in your inner circle that you know you can trust, and you've got to keep it to yourself. As much as you would love to say this and this and this and this, you can't do it. That would be my next one, Tony.
Yeah, I think if you know, you let emotions get the best of you, and the next thing you know, hey, I got let go, or I decided to quit at whatever, more to come. No, don't do that. Because if you air that dirty laundry out there on social media or whatever the case may be, if you have, like you said, if you have aspirations to do this again, if I'm an AD and I catch that, and then I have an opening in a few years, and I see your resume come across, and like, oh, I probably am not going to have that visit with you because of that. You know, there has to be some emotional maturity there as well, where you keep things, like you said, in that inner circle, maybe your spouse, your best friends, your coaching buddies, whatever, but people you trust that aren't going to go out there. You know, you won't believe what happened to Marty at X, Y, and Z. Here's exactly what happened. Those, you know, like you said, blankety blanks. No, don't. Nobody wins in that situation.
Nope. What else you got, buddy?
You know, one of the things I would encourage coaches, you know, when they step down or when they get let go, I'm sorry, do some introspection. I know you mentioned that earlier, but go to people that you trust and like, hey, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And then once you kind of figure that out, then figure out a game plan to maybe take those weaknesses, just like what we do with our players, and make them at least competent, if not proficient. But go back and kind of do some re-education, if you will, mm-hmm. to put a better version of yourself out there, so that when you get into that next interview, you know, hey, Ed, you know, West High, it didn't go so well for you, kind of a rough ending there. What did you learn from that experience?
Yeah.
And then I did this. I understood that this was an area that I needed to shore up. So I went back in there. I took some time, whether it's classes or clinics or whatever, and feel like, you know, I wouldn't say I'm the greatest at it, but I feel like I've made some major improvement in those areas. And I think that would be something I would also encourage coaches. Just have a chance, people that you trust. What did I do well? Right. Okay. And then what didn't I do so well? And then go back, whether it's education through clinics or, you know, whatever the case may be, but go out and try to round off some of those rough edges, if you will.
That is literally, Tony, where my program vision booklet came from. Where it's like, okay, you know, again, and I, you know, I've said it, I don't know how many times, tear the house down to the studs. And that's what I mean. Okay, let's just while I have this time, let's reexamine everything. Just take a look from top to bottom. What could I do differently? What did I do really well? If I had it to do over again, how would I, you know, course correct on this skill or that skill or whatever it may be? And I think that that's I think that's a huge part of it, Tony. So yeah, that introspection, absolutely. So, I think that kind of building on that, Tony, I'm trying to figure out which one I want to go to next year, but I'll say this. And I think we've both kind of said this, still study the game. Go out. I've never met a coach that if you're not, you know, in my year out now and even before then, I've never had a coach say, well, you can't come to practice because we don't want to give away any of our secrets to you or anything like that. That literally has never happened. Now, I've had, especially like at the collegiate level, I'll say, hey, I'm going to be in town. Would it be cool if I came to practice? And then I get a call the day before. You know what? The head coach is not happy right now. We're not letting anybody into practice right now. You know what I mean? That stuff, that has happened. You know?
That happens.
Yeah, that happens. Which, fine, you know, but still study. Like you said, have that introspection, take a look at things, maybe really focus on something. Like when I was at SCUT, here's an example of that, Tony. When I was at SCUT, we ran a little bit of 2-2-1, but in my 2 years between SCUT and Fort Calhoun, the more I looked at the 2-2-1, for me personally, this is just Marty Plum talking, I'm like, that is the best press I think you can run, because you can run it aggressively. You can run it you can run it passively. You can still potentially, you're going to force the other team to think. But yet, if you run it a certain way, you can apply pressure and trap with it. And if you do it right, you shouldn't give up too many easy baskets at the end of it. I took that time to really narrow that down. I felt like our pressing teams were jacks of all trades and masters of none. And one of the things that I said, if/when I get back into it, we're going to be, as soon as we can become a really good 2-2-1 team, we're going to be a 2-2-1 team. And that's exactly what we did. And it led to some really, really good success. So, those are the kind of things that I'm talking about there, Tony, where you still study the game. And okay, if I get a chance to do it again, I would, if I have the right personnel, this is what I want to run, and I'm going to really dive into the 2-2-1 or the B-line spread offense or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and that's one of the fun things about basketball is it can be done so many different ways. And, you know, one of the things that a coach can do is you can put that time in, you can study, you can become better at your craft and figure out, hey, if I get back into this, this is what I'm going to do. And study it so that when you get that opportunity, you're ready to hit the ground running. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to make sure, stay a student of the game, because basketball is one of those things where it ebbs and flows. I mean, you take a look at some of the different things in terms of, you know, it used to be we're going to go 4 out or 5 out or whatever the case may be. And now you're starting to see some of the teams kind of go back, if you will, a little bit and play a little bit more of the two bigs at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's really messed with some of those teams who like to go with the small ball stuff. And so just some of those counters and things are fun to watch, that whole chess game being played.
Mm-hmm. I've got 2 bullet points, Tony. What do you got left?
Yeah, another one I would encourage people with is sit back and what do you want in your next job? If you're going to get back into it, if you're going to stay into it, what do you want in your next job? Well, it's got to have this, it has to have that, and it's got to have these 2 or 3 other things on top of it. If it has those things, then I will get back. But if these are my you know, my deal breakers. If it doesn't have this one, I'm out. And so I would really encourage people to think through that. Are you wanting to go back and be a head coach again? Or are you willing to become a, you know, to be an assistant coach? One of the things that I have found is that with going the level I went to with coaching sophomores, one of the things I really appreciate about it is like, I get to be a head coach still, and I don't have to really worry about the varsity. Not that I haven't gone and sat bench before. I did not this past year, but the previous years, I had still hopped in the tournament and I've been active and done some of those things, but I just get to coach sophomores. I don't have to worry about the freshmen. I don't have to worry about the parent meetings, you know, as far as like the booster club and stuff like that. I don't have to worry about the travel stuff with the youth teams and things like that. I just get to do what I wanted to do, which is coach basketball. And that was a non-negotiable with me. If I went back, I was going to coach basketball, because a lot of times what happens when you get into a bigger school, you have these things pulling you 18 different ways.
Yep.
And I did not really enjoy that side of it.
Yeah, that was one of my last two bullet points there, Tony, essentially. Be smart about your next move. Don't jump in just to jump in. You know, I miss it. I just want to jump in. I've got a friend right now who is kind of struggling with that. You know, they want to get back in. They've been out for a while. They want to get back in. And they, you know, what do you think about this job? I don't think that's the right job for you. I'm just being honest, you know? And, you know, kind of, you know, not talking anybody off the ledge or anything like that, but just, do you want to do it, or do you want to do it right? And so I think, like you said, Tony, you brought back memories for me when I took the Fort Calhoun job, when I was ready to get back into it. I had five non-negotiables, and if it was 4 for 5, it didn't matter. That's a great day at the plate, but it wasn't going to work for me. It had to be 5 out of 5, and they met all five of those things that, in my mind at that time, that is what I wanted to do. So you've got to find the right fit, the right situation for you as a coach. Like you said, Tony, you were looking for a situation where you could just coach basketball, and you found that perfect spot for you there with the Kennedy sophomore team. So you've got to find what may be good for you, and that's, it's going to be different for everybody. Some people want to be a head coach. Some people just, I'll just go back and be an assistant coach. You know, my friend Jeff Ritz was a longtime head coach. When he was done as a head coach, he was done as a head coach, but he wanted to be an assistant coach. I gave him the autonomy that he wanted just because I wanted him on board, you know? So I think that that's just such really, really good stuff. The last thing that I had, Tony, how many more things you got, buddy?
I've got one.
Okay. So I've got one as well. Use this time to explore things outside of basketball. Perhaps you find other passions. If you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be the author of 2 books, I would have said, you are nuts. You are crazy. Now, they just both happen to be about basketball. I get that. You know, you're going to find different things. So I think that while you're keeping your eye on the prize, especially if you want to get back into coaching, take a look at some different things, and you might be surprised what you find out about yourself that, honestly, because coaching basketball is so all-encompassing, that you didn't realize, hey, you know what? I really like doing that, whatever it may be. And so that's my last bullet point there, Tony.
Mine is kind of similar, but, you know, if you decide that you no longer want to coach, find other areas to give back. Mm-hmm. You know, I think back to, you know, coaches who have come alongside me and mentored me. I think of what you're doing with the pen and a napkin and how that helps. I think of, you know, the program that I was able to be a part of this past winter with helping to mentor young coaches. And there are ways, like, just because you're no longer coaching a team doesn't mean that you don't have something to offer the game of basketball. And so I would encourage those who, like, hey, I'm going out on my own volition. I'm going out on my own accord here. But I would encourage them, you know, to still give back. I mean, find find a coach in your community. Hey, do you mind if I come in and watch practice and give you my 2 cents on what I think? Or, you know, get in touch with the Iowa basketball coaches, the Iowa Girls Coaches Association, or whatever the case may be. But find ways to give back, because one of the things that's hard to watch right now is the number of young coaches that are getting run off by a variety of reasons. But if they had that mentor in their life, maybe they would be willing to stick it out more than 2, 3, 5 years.
Mm-hmm. That mentorship, just being there as an advisor. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, I had, you know, Tim Cannon come up to my practice and just watched him. I'm not going to say anything. Just watch. Let me know what you think, you know, and I love doing that for other people as well. You know, I don't think, Tony, if anybody in Cedar Rapids a couple of years from now said, hey, Tony, would you come watch our practice here when it works out for you? You're not going to say no, are you?
No, I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So, and I think that, you know, I think you hit on an important point. And if there's any parents that are just listening to this, we are at a very dangerous point in coaching. We're losing officials, we're losing coaches, we're losing good people. I know for a fact that coaching jobs are getting harder and harder for administrators to fill because older coaches are getting burned out and younger coaches don't have the patience to want to do the grind that it takes to be a coach. And I think we are at a little bit of a Malcolm Gladwell tipping point in this situation here. And I really fear, and this is what a lot of a pen and napkin is about, is to try and negate that from happening, to help people, to help, you know, give people stuff that I wish that I knew when I was a younger coach 20 years ago or whatever it may be. I mean, I think that's kind of where it is, don't you think, Tony?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Again, I mean, it's coaches, it's officials, it's bus drivers, and pretty soon it's going to be like, we can't offer the kids some of the most important things for them in terms of their overall life education and different things that go along those lines because good people are leaving.
Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at @apenandanapkin. Email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School. USA Basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all 6 of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all 6 videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad. But because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. Well, Tony, you know who has never left.
Still out there touring. They're Europeans.
Tony, it is your turn for trivia. What do you have, my friend?
There was 2 of them I was looking at. I'm going to go with the first one that I thought of. What is the lowest points combined between two teams in the first quarter of an NBA playoff game?
Oh, jeez. Uh, 28.
Incorrect.
Too high, too low.
You are too high.
Wow. 25.
Is correct.
Yes, the and it counts.
Nuggets and Thunder tied that today. I think it was 17-8, if I remember correctly, at the end of the first quarter. And I cannot remember who they tied.
Oh, geez. 17-8. That's what it was. Well, all transparency, I did not see any of the game. I watched a ton of basketball yesterday, but because of circumstances, didn't get a chance to see any today. But I did not see that. And obviously, Mel Allen, if I've disappointed in him, he said.
How about that?
I think Mel's about ready to kick me to the curb here, Tony. So let's take a look at the playoffs here, Tony. Let's start in the East. Everything is turned upside down. I guess that's the way we would say it. We are taping Sunday night here, 9:23 right now. If you had the Cavaliers and -29, you lose at this point right now. According to my computer, it's 116-87, and Indiana is on the verge of ruining Cleveland's dream season. Is this a fluke, Tony, or is Indiana that good?
I would describe it as fluky, but Indiana's pretty good. I think I mentioned this maybe last week or the week before. If you go back and look at those teams' last 48, 49 games, they were very, very similar. And like I mentioned, I know Cleveland had the number one seed locked up and rested some guys at the end, but I think both of them were either 34-14 or 35-14, something like that down the stretch. And Indiana's pretty doggone good. And, you know, in Cleveland's defense, you had three guys dinged up. Garland's been dinged up. Mobley's dinged up.
Yep.
And
Hunter.
Shoot, I'm missing the third guy. Anyway, they've had some big pieces out. But I give Indiana credit because they got thumped in game three and they're doing the thumping tonight.
Yeah, you know, if you're gonna win a championship period, you've gotta win a couple of games that you shouldn't win along the way. And Indiana did that in game two, getting the offensive rebound off the free throw. Two offensive rebounds late in the game off of free throws. That's why you practice those free throw box outs, Tony. You know, Halliburton hits the big three. And then you kind of think, okay, Cleveland's got it back figured out. 22-point blowout in game three. And then Indiana scores. They're up by... Oh, geez, this is why I teach history.
41 at halftime.
41 at halftime. 80-8.
Always my other trivia question, by the way.
Oof. Okay. Largest halftime lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That they tied, and again, I don't know who they tied, but it was tied for the largest ever.
Wow. It's Indiana has won two of the three games convincingly. They're a really good team. If you take away the first few weeks of the season, they've been as good as Cleveland. And you also made a very, very valid point, Tony. Cleveland's beat up a little bit. Now that's kind of par for the course at this time of the year. Everybody's got nicks and bruises. We'll get to Golden State, and that's such a tragic situation in that regard. Not like human tragic, but basketball tragic. But Indiana's looking awful good. I think it would be hard for them to close it out in Cleveland, but right now I think you can safely say all bets are off the table. Let's jump to the other Eastern Conference series here. Celtics and Knicks. If you were to ask me before 7 o'clock tonight, I would say I would feel really good about the Celtics' chances of evening that up two games apiece because of what they did in game three. And the Knicks won a couple of fluky games in games one and two in Boston. But after watching this, I don't think you can make that same assumption here. Not to say that you assume it, but I think it's closer. The Celtics have dominated this series and very easily could be up 3-0. They're not, and you don't get to go back and do it over again. But the Celtics, at the very least, should be up 2-1, but probably should be up 3-0. They've had 20-point leads in all three games, and they just did a poor job of closing it out in the first two, and now they got to dig themselves out of another hole.
Yeah, and the Celtics obviously rely on the three quite a bit. And because of that, the first two games, if they're in the middle of the lake in a boat and fell out, I don't know if they would have hit water. But they made 23s last night. So are they snapped out of it, or will they go back to where they have an off shooting night? You know, all the Burrows are going to be out in New York tomorrow, and the Celtics are going to have their hands full. I would say this: if the Celtics win tomorrow, I'm pretty confident they're going to make to these conference finals. If they don't, they are in some trouble.
Yeah, Celtics fan, they're so frustrating sometimes. You know, Bill Simmons, I think, puts it perfectly. They go to the let's play with our food offense is what he calls it. You know, they just kind of putz around and hold the ball. And then with 6 seconds left, all right, Tatum or Brown, go one-on-one here. And you can say the same thing about New York with Jalen Brunson. But, it's just... they get a little conservative. Like I said, they get a little, obviously they're very prominent shooters of the three. And they won a championship with it last year. So you can't say too much. You can't criticize. Once you win a championship, you don't really apologize for anything, as Brian Windhorst says. So game three, tomorrow, or game four tomorrow night, final prediction, Tony, for game four.
I am going to take Boston tomorrow. It's going to be much closer than what game three was, but I'm going to take Boston tomorrow. And close.
I'm going to say Boston by six is my prediction. So we are in tune there. So let's go out west. Let's talk about the Timberwolves and the Warriors. Saw a good chunk of this game last night, the last 14, 15 minutes. Again, basketball tragic that Steph Curry, for the first time in his career, injures a hamstring. I think this was shaping up to be a really good series, and by all means, it still could be. But I think Minnesota kind of figured out last night that they are just a lot bigger, stronger, and faster than this collection of Golden State Warriors without the gravity of Steph Curry out there. And I could see this heading into like a 4-1 here. I think Minnesota could close this out perhaps faster than anybody else here as we move on. I just think Edwards has... he's figured out that nobody on Golden State can guard him. Julius Randle is playing terrific basketball right now. Gobert is playing to his strengths, and their role players are doing good things. I think this might be our first series that gets done out of these four.
I would agree with that. I mean, to me, it's like you're in a fight and you have one hand tied behind your back with Golden State not having Steph Curry. And I thought that Minnesota took Golden State's best shot last night. You had a really good Jimmy Butler game, and then maybe an unexpected Jonathan Kuminga game where he was really, really good too. And, you know, it seemed like that Minnesota, between, like you said, the Edwards and the Randle play, was able to head that off. And I just think Minnesota is going to close it out in five. I'm pretty confident in that, because I think Steph is not projected back until game six at the earliest.
Yeah, and that's at the earliest. And I would be, I don't know, I think it's going to be tough for him to come back that quickly even. So probably the most competitive, I don't want to say the most competitive. I'm actually slightly surprised that we're at 2-2. I thought Oklahoma City, I thought they might be up 3-1 at this point. But the Joker is unbelievable. He's kept their heads above water, and he's just 30 points a game, just kind of a deal. 30 points, 13 rebounds, 10 assists a game. Yeah, and he's 7 feet tall, no big deal. But I think with today's rock fight victory for Oklahoma, I think they could be headed towards a six-game series sweep here. I think just their depth, their athleticism, their defensive tenacity, I think is going to wear down Denver, as much as it pains me to say that. But if there's a way that Jokic could take it to another level, which I don't know how he could take it to another level, but I think that's about the only way that Denver can find a way to win two out of these next three games.
You know, I don't see Denver winning the series. I do see it potentially going seven. I think Jokic is gonna have one more of those games, because don't get me wrong. I mean, he had 27 points today, but if you take a look at his attempts, he was 7 out of 22 from two, and I believe 2 out of 8 from three, if I'm looking at things correctly. But just not a very efficient Jokic game. You know, and then you go through and take a look. Oklahoma City is just deeper, like you were kind of bringing up there. I mean, you go through and you take a look. They played 11 guys. They played 10 guys. You know, Denver's lucky if they can get 8 guys out there, to be honest with you. You know, they have 2 of the guys play single digits minutes. Between Strother was 5 and Watson was 9. Mm-hmm. And I just think the longer the series goes, the more that it favors Oklahoma City. I think Oklahoma City is a better defensive team. They're deeper, they're younger. And I see this ending in most likely 6, but it wouldn't surprise me if it goes 7.
Yeah, I think we're looking at the same box score. Shea played 38 minutes. Every starter except for Denver played at least 38 minutes. And Michael Porter played 34. So Denver is kind of like, you know, the high school team that has 6 good kids. And then they've got 2 other guys like, okay, just go out and don't just stand in the corner or whatever, you know, type of a deal. So yeah, I agree with you, Tony. I think we're on the same page there. So, real quick, Tony, let's talk about the NBA. One of my favorite nights of the year, me and Zach Lowe. I love the NBA lottery. I think it's great. The teams, Washington, Charlotte, and Utah, I believe, are the teams with the 3 greatest chances of winning the Cooper Flag sweepstakes. What say you, Mr. Viss, about the lottery and how are you a lottery guy, Tony?
I do enjoy the lottery. The other day, I think yesterday, I was looking around some stuff and came across, you know, what scenarios would happen with the lottery on ESPN.com. And it was just really interesting. I mean, number one consensus, going to take Cooper Flag. Number two, the 2 guys from Rutgers are looked at as being the 2nd and 3rd best prospects. But then you start to get into some of those other areas. The post kid from Duke, the Knipple kid from Duke, yep. The freshman guard from Oklahoma. I'm trying to think, there was another one in there too, but it's a pretty deep draft. I think it's better than what people are underestimating it. But yeah, I think it was Jonathan Givony, probably butchering that, yeah. Jeremy Wu were the ones that were doing that. And it was just a really interesting read. But I get into the draft. I would, you know, if you sat there, you know, Tony, you could either be an NBA head coach, which that's never going to happen. You could be an NBA GM, which is never going to happen. I don't know if I would not be more tempted by the GM thing, to be honest with you.
You could be an NBA GM, Tony. You just have to buy yourself an Xbox and get NBA 2K like I have, you know? So I think I've been fortunate enough to talk to a couple NBA guys. The kid that's going to get people fired one way or another is Ace Bailey. Because if you pick him and he turns out to be a dud, you're going to get fired. And if you don't pick him because you're worried about personal habits, work ethic, maturity, and he ends up blowing up and being a stud, which he very well could, you're going to get fired either way. So somebody's getting fired because of Ace Bailey, I think. And we'll talk about that more as we get closer to the draft here. I can tell you right now, Tony, I do not want the Sixers or the Suns to win the lottery. I will be irate if either one of those, they They screwed up their team so badly, they don't deserve to win. I think everybody else has kind of a clear path here. Okay, you deserve this pick, whether because you're tanking or you're trying to play young people and trying to get them, you know, whatever the scenario may be. But those two teams, I don't care what happens. I just don't want either one of those teams to win it. That's just me. Neither one of them deserve Cooper Flag.
Yeah, I'm in agreement on that. And then you take a look at some of these teams, you know, that are like late lottery, that it's a deep enough draft that if they get the right player, they could be, you know, a team that makes the playoffs next year. I'm really intrigued by Portland, and I'm really intrigued by the Spurs, because I think those are two teams that if the right piece falls to them, they could really take off and be what's that missing piece that could get them into the playoffs. Now, I'm not talking about winning a series. I'm just talking about getting themselves into the playoffs. And the Raptors are another one who might be a piece away as well. Mm-hmm.
Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. In our last segment this week, and we're going to do this week, and we're also going to do it next week, we are going to give our annual WNBA preview. Tony and I are going to give our picks, but we have a guest prognosticator. I guess we'll call him that. Recent college graduate. What, 36 hours ago? Less than?
Yeah.
Yeah? He's Carter Plum. He's my son. He's back in town here, and Carter's going to come on the pod here the next couple of weeks to give us his prognostications here when it comes to WNBA. Carter, are you excited to be back on the podcast?
So excited.
So excited. Yeah, you probably have to talk. You have to get a little closer, talk a little louder.
So excited.
So excited. There we go. That's the enthusiasm that we're looking for there. So let's go 6-1, gentlemen. Tony, since you're not in the house, literally, you can give your sixth pick at the, or who is going to be in the cellar of the Eastern Conference, in your opinion?
Buddy, can we call this segment Two Plums and a Dingleberry? Or is that okay?
It's fine. How long have you been sitting on that one?
When we talked earlier that you said Carter was coming on, I thought of that one. So, yeah, a few hours now, but yeah.
That was funny. I thought it was funny.
Carter, thank you.
Carter, do you think it was funny?
I don't think Carter thought it was nearly as funny as we did. People don't find our humors at the same level.
Not really my generation's humor, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe if I was older.
Yeah. Someday you'll appreciate us, Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the Two Plums and a Dingleberry segment here.
I am going to go with, in spot number 6 in the cellar of the Eastern Conference, I am going with the Washington Mystics.
I, too, am going with the Mystics. Carter?
I also have the Mystics.
Yeah, I think we would all be in agreement. This is a complete restart. I think they had 3 of the top 6 draft picks or something like that. And I like their draft. I never get her name right. Kiki Arafian or whatever from UF.
From USC, Stanford. Yeah.
Arafian.
Arafian. I struggle with names. That's one I struggle with. I think she's going to be really good. I was surprised that they took the point guard out of Kentucky,
Georgia Amor.
Amor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she tore ACL.
So that's a loss. So, yeah. So we all thought that they were going to be in the cellar, and now they are deeper in the cellar, I think, after that. So it's stripping the house down to the studs, I think, is safely on the Washington Mystics bingo card here this season. So do we need to say any more, gentlemen?
Nope.
No, it just seems like they got rid of the T-Bulls. You know, Mike had gone into the front office and his son was the coach, and they decided to go with a complete reboot rather than kind of messing around with things. And I don't know if that wasn't the right move.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out in about 4 years. That's when we'll be really able to know about it. So, Carter, you are the guest plum of the two plums and a dingleberry.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you have in fifth place in the Eastern Conference, Carter?
I have the Connecticut Sun.
Tony?
I'm going to agree with them. This is crazy. And if you agree with us, that's two in a row.
Well, it's two in a row because I have Connecticut as well. Yes. They're kind of remodeling the house. I wouldn't say they've stripped it down to the suds the way the Mystics did, but, they lost their coach. She's at Indiana now, which obviously that's going to come up here at some point. They still have Mabry. I like the draft pick of Anisha Murrow. Tina Charles, we'll see what she has in her gas tank at age 36. I don't think Connecticut's going to be very good, but I think they're going to be better than Washington. Carter, what do you think?
I think they will be better than Washington based off of the fact that they have like Tina Charles. They also have the only thing why I have them so low on the rankings is because one of their best players, Marina Mabry, asked for a trade from her team and was declined. Mm-hmm. So if your best player doesn't really want to be there that much, it's hard to get chemistry going, especially when everybody knows that she doesn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Tony, what do you think, buddy?
Yeah, I think it's a deal where, like Carter said, Marina doesn't want to be there. And I think before the WNBA trade deadline, I think she will be moved once Connecticut figures out they're not going to be successful. And Tina Charles is a band-aid. I mean, she's still a good player, don't get me wrong. But at her age, she's going to be there for a year, maybe two max, before she calls it a career. But yeah, I think Connecticut will be in line for a top draft pick next year.
Yep, agreed. So, well, then I'll go first here for the fourth spot. Let's see if our unity remains here. I have the Chicago Sky in the fourth spot. Tony, how about you?
We're still unified. I have them a little bit behind the Atlanta Dream.
What say you, Carter Plum?
I also have the Chicago Sky.
It's getting a little creepy, you know, and we didn't talk about this. This is all off the cuff here. Obviously, huge, you know, Atlanta was not very good last year, but they've got two pieces that are better than pretty much anything that either one of our previously mentioned teams have. They've got Brittany Griner, a huge free agent signing, and then Ryan Howard, all-star level player, you know, just an outstanding player. So just those two combined, if they stay healthy, they're going to automatically put the Dream above these other two teams. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Breonna Jones might have went there as well to Atlanta. And I know we're talking about Chicago, but that's another piece that I think is better than anything Chicago has. You know, you take a look, Angel Reese had a really good rookie year, but I think now that there is film on her, I think you'll see some adjustments in the way they guard her or maybe don't guard her. Cardoso, I think, is the better of the two rookies last year, but for whatever reason, Reese got more of the publicity. And then I also like...
I can't imagine Angel Reese looking for publicity, by the way. I'm just throwing that
out. Not a publicity hound at all.
No, not at all. So anyway, Tony, what were you saying? Sorry, buddy.
I'm trying to remember the piece that went back because there was a Chicago guard that came back to the Sky. I think she had gone to York.
Courtney Vandersloot.
There you go. Vandersloot is back. Yeah, Vandersloot's back. I like that, but I just don't think the Sky have enough to get into that top two or three in the East.
Yeah. Carter, what do you got, buddy?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. Courtney Vandersloot does bump up the Chicago Sky to that spot, but at the same time, Atlanta has like Alicia Gray, who last year I think won the skills challenge or the 3-point challenge, one of the two.
Yeah.
So she has the ability to spread the court and handle the ball really well. And so I think that Atlanta overall has added more to their roster. They'll both have added to their rosters. I think the Dream have added more than the Sky have, which pushes them above.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see how Cardozo and Reese play together in year two. They've got a year under their belt. You know, what is that going to look like in this modern era of basketball? I don't care if you're men's basketball or women's basketball, you got to have that spacing. And very rarely do you see teams play with two post players that can't don't have one that consistently shoots it from the perimeter. So I think we're in agreement here, fellas, that every one of us has Chicago at four and Atlanta at three. Mm-hmm. Are we in agreement there? All right. So let's jump to two then, Carter Plum. What do you have? Who do you have in the second spot in the Eastern Conference?
The Indiana Fever.
Tony?
It's probably the Iowa Homer in me, but I feel like the Liberty, after winning it last year, may not be as hungry this year. So I have the New York Liberty in spot number two.
And this is where we diverge. This is where we split. Words are complicated. I've got Indiana at two as well. I think this is where I'm at. Or Carter, you started this. Why do you have Indiana at two?
Well, first of
all, other than being a Liberty fan.
Besides being a Liberty fan, I think from being a Liberty fan, the reason why I can make this assumption based off of how it will shake out is 2 years ago, the year that the Liberty came up short against the Aces, we saw that they had every part that they needed. It just came down to the chemistry of the team and needing more time to play together. So I see similar things happening with Indiana where they went out, they got all the pieces that they need, similar to what New York did, but they need that time to play together, learn how each other works in order to... Now, I could see them getting far. I couldn't see them winning it all, whereas I could see New York winning it all again. I don't see that same thing happening from Indiana.
Tony?
Well argued, Carter Plum. I like the chemistry talk, and I like the things that you touched on, but I go back... I just think talent is really, really tough to go against. And I love the additions of DeWanna Bonner as well as Sophie Cunningham and then Natasha Howard to go with the big three the Fever already had. And I just think the Fever are on the upswing. And I think they're going to be hungry. And just watching them the little bit that I have in the preseason so far, they've got some really interesting chemistry already. And I think Caitlin Clark, if you look at her, looks like she's added a lot more muscle, is going to be able to take the physicality of the WNBA this year and kind of, I guess, ruin the thing. I think she's going to be the MVP this year as well. But I really am all in. I pushed all my chips in on the Indiana Fever.
So if you lose the house, then you and Rita are moving in with me and Carla because of this bet.
Yeah, give them basement, right?
Yeah, there you go. We might have room by that point. So, I think the Liberty have one more year. Now, I think if it's a year from now, I like what you're cooking up, and I think the Liberty might be in the okay, get us to the playoffs mode. And Indiana might put some more pressure on them about winning the conference in the regular season. But Breonna Stewart is still probably, her or Asia Wilson are the two best players in the league, in my opinion. Jonquel Jones is still only 31. Inescu is under 30. Phoebish, is that how you say it?
Phoebish,
yeah. She came on, had a great finals run last year. Lainey Hamilton is a great role player. So I still think there's a lot of really good pieces there for New York. And I could see Caitlin Clark being MVP, without a doubt. I just think I could see New York winning the conference by a game or two. And then we'll see what happens in the playoffs. I mean, by then, and I think people forget what Indiana started out last year, like 1-8, 1-9, something crazy like that, and ended up over 500. And so adding those pieces in, I think, will help. I think Bonner and Sophie Cunningham are two perfect pieces to go with Caitlin Clark and, like you said, Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston. So I think it's going to be a good run. I think we're all in agreement, the top two, and then there's a big gap between 2 and 3. Wouldn't we say that, guys?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, hey, we'll check back in 3 months and see where we're at. See if we've actually got any of this figured out. Carter, you got anything to add, buddy?
The only thing I was going to say is the ESPN released their rankings of the top 30 WNBA players.
Yeah.
And looking at those rankings, if we're going to talk about talent, he says talent is hard to play against. The New York Liberty have 3 people in the top 10, which the Indiana Fever do not. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to go based off of talent, even not even just chemistry, the New York Liberty still have them on that front. I think it's Breanna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu, and Jonquil Jones are all in the top 10.
3 of the top 7. So
yeah.
He's got a degree in education in Spanish, Tony, but I think he's got a chance to be a lawyer if he really wanted to.
That was pretty good. I see a few of them on the downswing of their career. Yeah. As far as where they are age-wise. And, you know, I would, if you gave me a choice, Caitlin Clark or Sabrina Ionescu, I'm taking Caitlin Clark. And then if you go with the others, Aaliyah Boston and Jonquil Jones, that's a pretty good argument on that one. And I would still take Breanna Stewart over Kelsey Mitchell. But yeah. It's close for me. And I think once you get outside that top 3, then you're starting to talk about the Sophie Cunninghams and Natasha Howards and some of those additions that the Fever added. And I think those pieces, I think collectively might be better. But again, that's where I stand. And it's an opinion thing. And I completely get that.
Yep. Well, gentlemen, terrific job. We'll be back next week with the same segment here. Only we'll be talking about the Western Conference. Probably the stronger of the two conferences, I would say, going into this year. But we'll have that chopped up and ready to roll. Carter Plum, great job on the podcast tonight.
Thanks.
Congratulations on being a college graduate, in case you haven't heard me say that a couple of times in the last couple of days.
Thanks.
Yeah. Tony, great stuff as always here. We will be back next week with something. Like I said, we'll get it figured out. I'm not sure what, but we'll get something figured out here. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.